This is Will's Band of the Week for August 10th, 2020. And welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett from one of his many studios.
Hello there.
Is there a main studio and satellite studios, or are they sort of all satellite studios?
Kind of all satellite studios. I don't know about you guys, but I have this weird thing about when I'm recording the podcast, nobody in the house is able to hear me, right?
You don't want people eavesdropping?
Yeah, no, I don't feel comfortable. That's maybe kind of weird because I spend all my days talking with these people, but when I'm talking about music with you guys, they're not privy to that.
Well, you need to be focused, you know. And then they can of course listen to the podcast if they want to hear what you say.
They could.
Yep.
Yes, in theory, they could do that.
And so, David.
Wandering through and listening, but you know, I think that's because they just want to avoid spoilers. You know, if you hear it in advance, it ruins the effect of listening to the whole thing.
That makes sense.
And I was about to say, and David, from an undisclosed remote location.
Oh yes,
we think it's in under a mountain somewhere,
7,000 feet.
So down. You can only imagine. I'm imagining kind of a concrete cell. But hopefully more amenities than like a prisoner would have. Like at least there's a podcasting studio down there. Most prisoners don't have that.
Canned goods left over from the 1960s.
Campbell's soup.
On signs that say fallout shelter.
Yep.
And a full podcasting studio. It's very weird that we have that up-to-date technology. But I don't understand it, but that's what it is.
Well, more things should be turned into podcasting studios, right?
That's the beauty of podcasting. You can pretty much do it wherever you are. Right,
all those malls that are being abandoned right now because all the stores are closing. I think they'll all become podcast studios.
What is going to happen to malls? Like malls were already kind of becoming uncool, right?
Right.
Yeah, they were fading out.
And I know there was one mall here in Madison that a few years ago they sort of ripped the thing up down and rebuilt to sort of an outdoor mall type theme. Which I thought was weird because it's Wisconsin and, you know, you can do that for half the year, but then the other half the year, I didn't know about the outdoor mall concept, but it doesn't seem to have really hurt it.
No, it kind of works.
They were betting on climate change, obviously.
Yeah, right. All we need is like a 40-degree upward average temperature.
But back in the day, Will, you and I growing up in the Fox River Valley, going to the mall was like a very legitimate, cool thing to do, right?
Sure, yeah. So
hang out. The one in Green Bay had two record stores. I remember buying my first cool records at, what was it, Music Land in the mall. So, yeah.
Music Land, what a classic mall record store. Yeah. Yeah. I used to work at the mall in beautiful Oshkosh, Wisconsin. It was called Park Plaza Mall. And it was weird because it was one of the early malls and it wasn't, out in the suburbs to the extent there are suburbs in a place like that. But it's right downtown, right? Main Street at the river. And it kind of had its heyday in the probably like 1975 to 1985 or something. And then just kind of the structure is still there. Every once in a while I go back there. And my best memory from that place is when they did the dance marathon. I don't know if I ever talked about this on the podcast. They did a 60-hour dance marathon right in the middle. They had the center court area. And there was some rule about having to stay awake. And it was right by the store that I worked at. So I just remember this thing. It was just great. Wow. playing like Saturday Night Fever, all the disco stuff, Donna Summer, you know, all that stuff. And then I can't even remember what the rules were, you know, like the last person to stay awake wins. I don't know. I'm not even sure.
Basically, just don't stop dancing. I think once you stop, that's
yeah,
it.
That could be it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, the mall in Green Bay was called Pork
During Depression.
What was that, David?
I said I thought those were only put on during the Depression, but apparently they lasted a little longer. I don't know.
Yeah, to suburban Wisconsin, I guess they lasted longer. We were behind the times.
Scots are a little bit later, you know.
Yeah.
Like the flagpole sitting craze didn't hit Wisconsin until the 90s. Give you kind of an idea.
Yeah.
70 years later than everywhere else.
Flappers, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
David's got a bird in his bunker. Either that or Barrett's got one in the satellite studio.
Yeah. I hear it in my headphones, so it's not me. Yeah.
We've got birds here.
They're very active.
They are.
You need a cat or cats to be giving them attention. My wife has a couple of bird feeders outside, and the cats just go crazy. You know, they just get completely focused, staring at the birds at the bird feeder. So,
is it distracting? Do you want me to head inside? Or?
No, it just stopped chirping, so it's fine. It gives us a kind of a natural feel.
All right.
Let's see. We did the mall update. And, what else do we have before we get to our musical selections? I guess there's sort of a live report that I think David and I could both give from watching one, but it relates to one of the bands we're going to talk about, so we can kind of combine that, right?
We can glide into that. That's true.
There's David. Wow, his video is on.
Here, you've got the full effect of the background there.
You're in daylight. There's daylight there, not a prison cell like I imagined.
Yeah.
Lots of sun. That's good. Panoramic view.
Back porch.
Too bad the listeners can't see that. I don't think we're going to become a video podcast anytime soon.
So, no.
Chris would do them all by Zoom, probably, if we could.
Right.
And I don't really mind doing Zoom, but when we record these, the audio works better on Skype. So that's what we're doing for the time being, at least.
Yeah, you don't want to have to worry about how your hair looks or what you're wearing or, you know, I don't know.
Exactly.
How cool your background is. Chris did try to, I think he really wanted to get that off the ground. We did that one Skype call with everybody, and he kind of insisted on having a portion of that on the podcast.
You know,
I could never bring myself to listen to. I just...
Well, you know, you could, what some do is you could record it live so that people could actually watch while you're recording it. That seems to be a trend now. And then you release the episode, but that would give people the option for the spontaneity of the live show. But, well, at least as of yet, we haven't done that. So
Chris just wants people to see that cool studio of his, which is pretty cool looking. I got it.
Yeah, Ron Swanson Studios, yeah. I'm trying to think, like, if I was going to have a full-sized cardboard replica of a person, who would it be? I don't know. Maybe I'd have Joe Casey. he'd have like a disdainful. You know, he'd be facing sideways, kind of staring off with an aloof kind of look on his face. That'd be kind of cool. What do you guys think?
I think Joe Casey or Joe Strummer would be good too.
Sure.
Yeah,
you could probably find a nice life-size Joe Strummer somewhere.
Look at what Shane McGowan.
There's an edgy choice. I like that. With a beer in his hand, or maybe several beers.
But yeah. Do you have to look at his missing teeth? I don't know.
Well, I mean, from my point of view, he looked better with the rotten teeth than he does with the new set of fake choppers. It just looks bizarre.
I haven't seen a picture of him recently.
Yeah, it's kind of just jarring.
I bet.
You know, but yeah, no, I'd want him with a great big toothless smile. You know,
just always. I'm just always surprised to hear that Shane McGowan is still alive.
Yeah,
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, it seems like if somebody's beaten up their body that bad, it's sort of surprising to see them into middle age. Right. Like, how old would he be now? Is he...
He's 62.
Okay. It's good. Yeah. Pretty impressive you could rattle that right off, Barrett.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I know that he was born on Christmas Day, 1957. So...
Wow. On Christmas. Oh, that gives
Christmas
me...
Day. Yes.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
On to that, on that special day, baby was born that brought so much joy and goodness to the world.
Yeah.
Shane McGowan.
Oh, that's great.
Great Irish bands. How's that for a segue?
Ooh, yeah, nice.
All right, let's do it. Let's rock and roll. There's a new Fontaines DC album, and people probably knew. Any regular listeners to the podcast would have known that we're going to talk about this because we have to, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Even if we didn't like it. And I know at least some of us like it. So it was, let's go back in history. It was only about a year and a half ago that we all first heard this band. And I remember we were prepping to go to the festival and we all came up with like three selections of songs by bands we are interested in seeing. And I'm pretty sure I was the one who picked the song Big, which was their first, what was the first song on their album that hadn't come out yet. And I remember thinking, yeah, this is fun. This is cool. I'm going to be interested to see this band. And then we saw them. And then, of course, it was kind of exponentially cooler than what we even had imagined, I think. They were like the buzz band, according to us, at least, and a lot of, and the cool people like, well, Barrett and David Frick, for example, would be two people,
right?
Impressive people who were impressed by Fontaines.
And half the rock critics in the world were all in that room.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy, I always forget the name. It was Craig was telling us about the famous British guy. Do you guys remember that guy's name?
I only remembered that he brought it up, but I hadn't heard of him, and yeah.
But the guy, he was like on the level of John Peel, you know, like legendary. So
Bob Boylan was there, and
yeah, Bob Boylan. Yep.
Yeah.
So
we all got stuff thrown at us that night, I believe, or spilled on us.
Probably. Yeah. So then the album came out later, like a month later. In April, I believe, of last year. And now album number two. So they were touring like crazy. And then somehow in the middle of all their touring last fall, around, I think, October, they finished recording this album. And then they just released it a week ago. And I don't know where to start here. I guess I'll just say what I think. And you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I was thinking about this because... I was going to call it a great album. I'm going to call it a great album, actually. And then, I was thinking about how if you say something is great, how that can be interpreted in different ways, and it could mean different things. So my example is my next door neighbor is a Minnesota Vikings fan, and I, of course, am a Green Bay Packer fan. And Barrett, you know, Barrett's even more of a Green Bay Packer fan than me. Actually, a lot more at this point, because I've kind of fallen off my enthusiasm from what it used to be. But anyway, I remember... So we have this...
Neither of you burned the other's house down yet.
I know. I mean, things could get ugly, but they've maintained kind of a friendly rivalry. So I remember one time, this is probably like 8 or 10 years ago, and the Packers were having a really good season, and they were probably like 7-1 or something. They're doing really well. And I was talking to my neighbor, and I remember telling him that the Packers are a great team. And then I remember, like, he kept repeating this to me. Then in the future, he would say, "Oh, so are they a great team?" And I realized that what I meant by that was not like actual greatness, but just that it was my level of enthusiasm, right? I was like, they're great,
right?
You know? So, you know, I think this album is, I'm really happy with it. It's a really fun listen. It's right in the wheelhouse of, you know, I guess of my musical taste. And it's, if you want to compare it to the first album, I don't know, it's hard to do that. I mean, I think one of us, maybe it was David, was saying, you know, how do you follow up an album that you loved so much. And then, you know, what are you supposed to really think about it? But I think, I feel like there's basically one slip up on this album. And it, it's dangerous because it might be, what if it's a song that one of you guys pick? I'll divulge it later. But other than the one slip up that I would say, I think it's all good. Part of the fun is the contrast, like if they slow it down and they pick it up. So the track I'm going to pick, it's even better in the sequencing of the album. Let's play the title track, A Hero's Death.
Empty. Life ain't always 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 empty. Don't get stuck in the past. Say your favorite things at mass. Tell your mother that you love her. I go out of your way for others. Sit beneath the light that suits you and look forward to a brighter future. Life ain't always empty. 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 Sink as far down as you could be pulled up. Happiness really ain't all about luck. Let your demeanor be your deep down self. And don't sacrifice your life for your health. When you speak, speak sincere. And believe me friend, everyone will hear. Life ain't always empty. 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 Life ain't always empty.
That's the title track from the Fontaines D.C. second album, A Hero's Death.
So people should know there's a great video with this song.
Right.
In which a British actor, whose name I've totally forgotten, who played Littlefinger in Game of Thrones, portrays a sleazy talk show host. And the band, Fontaines, are hanging out in his green room, and he pops in. I mean, I feel like it's a dig at, you know, when bands appear on like the Jimmy Fallon show or whatever. Anyway, then it gets very surreal. It gets totally David Lynch by the end. But it's a great video, and it just goes with this song. You don't see them performing at all in that video. Now, if you want to see them performing, right, Will?
Oh yeah, right. The live report.
Yes.
Yep. Is that still accessible? That link. I wasn't even sure how, so I bought the album on Bandcamp, and then I got this email notice that says, you can watch this live performance, and then it said something like the link will be good for 48 hours or something. And then, so I sent David the link, and apparently it worked for you.
Not only for me, but I managed to pass it on to a friend who also watched the whole thing, so.
Oh, cool.
Very cool. And when we say, you know, these days, what passes for a live performance is something very low-tech and awful-looking from somebody's bedroom, right?
Right.
This was one of the most heavily produced concerts you would see in non-corona times. Just straight ahead, one of the best visually put-together concerts I've ever seen. Would you?
Yeah, right. I mean, they were in a club on a stage with super high sound quality and multiple cameras switching around, and they just played this new album all the way through, and then a few songs from the previous album, and it was all great.
But with lights and funky sets and rear projection, I mean, it was just something to watch. It wasn't just, you know,
right,
play the album. It was amazing, actually.
Yeah, I meant to watch it. I just didn't have, it was like an hour long.
Yep.
Couldn't string together an hour of free time all in a row. So that's a bit of a cop-out, obviously. I could have if I'd really wanted to, but...
Yeah, it's basically yeah. Inexcusable, but so I don't know. Maybe we could just, you can
I
just leave.
Ask for forgiveness anyway.
I was going to say you could just leave the call right now. Bye, Barrett.
Wow, that was harsh.
Oh, no, we'll keep you on.
One of the reasons that I wanted to watch the whole thing was that I wasn't really quite sure how I felt about the record just listening to it. And, you know, seeing it performed is a whole other thing. So I think that was my main motivation. I wanted to get it fixed in my mind.
That was my suspicion, is that I'd like it more if I did watch it. Just that added energy that a live performance can bring to a song. That some of the songs on the album are, you know, I like them all. They're all fine. Some of them are just a little bit lacking in life and a spark, you know?
Yeah, there's a little bit of balladry.
Yeah.
But I think they've got some good hooks in most of the ballads.
Right. And I think as Jeremiah pointed out, one other thing that's different, not just the mood of the album, the lyrics, you know, this one that you picked, for instance, is... they're repetitive, not especially poetic, and just pretty straightforward. You know, this one is almost like you're giving somebody a pep talk with just, I don't know, little simplistic ideas about a way to live your life. I don't know. I thought the last one was just a little bit more, or actually a lot more poetic and artistic and lyrically interesting than this one is.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I'm sounding like maybe I don't like it at all, and that's not true. The first day I listened to it, several, you know, they've built up enough goodwill with me, and they've got a lot to draw on, right? So if this had been their first album, I probably would have listened to it once or maybe twice and then moved on. But
mm-hmm.
I was kind of imagining that the more I listened to it, the more I would like it. But it kind of became fixed at a certain point, which is, you know, like pretty good. I like it a good deal, but it hasn't really progressed from there. And I you know, they weren't going to outdo themselves. The first album was probably not, to outdo that was probably not achievable. They might have known that and decided just to go in a totally different direction. So, you know, whether or not they succeeded, I don't know. What were they trying to do, I guess, would be the question.
You know, you got to say that it's the curse of the second album if the first one is that great. I mean, we have that problem with the Beths as well. You know, if they do something different, then it's like, well, but it's a disappointment. And if they do the same thing, then, well, you know, they're just repeating themselves. So you sort of can't win that game, really.
Right.
In some ways. I
mean,
What could Fontaine's DC really do on a second album that would make you think, oh yeah, well, the first one was good, this is amazing? I mean, it's just, I can't even think where it would go.
Right. I mean, it could have been, a lot of bands would make something that's maybe in a similar vein. You know, maybe it'd be like Murmur and Reckoning, right? Murmur, I think I like Reckoning a little bit better. Murmur mm-hmm. came first. Most people like that more. They're both just great, and kind of one sound. They didn't have to go that way, but it's not like it would have been impossible to give it a try if they'd wanted to. They might have just gotten tired of that sound. You know, before we heard of them, they were a bar band kind of going around for a long time playing the songs like that. They might have just got sick of it, you know?
Right.
On to something else.
There's also the eternal fact that the first album can build on years of songwriting and practicing and playing, whereas the second one only builds on, in this case, less than a year.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I've got definitely more enthusiasm about this than Barrett. I think it's just more on my wheelhouse of musical taste, because I actually think that if this had been their first album, I would have just absolutely loved it as much as I do. To me, it sounds like the first two U2 albums. It's pretty much probably on that level. And, you know, of course, U2 got huge when they got the worse they got, the more popular they got. But they were pretty popular with their first two albums, which are the best two, I think. So there's another superlative I'm going to give it. Well, Barrett, you must have liked it enough to make a pick, right?
Sure. No, I don't get me wrong. I didn't dislike it at all. I just had such high hopes for it. I'm going to pick the one that came right after that, number 8, Living in America. It's a little feistier than some of it, and I kind of like that one.
So the impressive thing about that song, I think, one of the impressive things, is how low he can sing, right? He can really hit some really low notes. A couple other songs are like that, too. And so, I don't think he did that much on the first album.
Right. And you know, a lot of the times he's not singing in an especially tuneful way, but in that song he really is. Especially when he gets down low there, he's not, you know, not off key at all. I think it sounds cool.
Yeah.
He's got a couple of songs on this album where he takes his voice in slightly different directions than on the first one. So
right. That's
a promising development for sure.
He did less work on the poetic lyrics, but more work on his voice, maybe.
I guess so.
All right, David, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts were initially kind of like Barrett's on my first couple run-throughs, you know, a little too repetitive, a little too, you know, maybe lacking a certain wild edge that was on the first one. And I think that's still true. But when I watched watch him run through the whole thing, and then, you know, once they finish the album, they do, I think, two or three cuts from the first album live as well. And I realized at that point, you know, how much of a piece it is. It's really a continuation. Again, you know, not as great as the first one, but what could be. But very much the same, you know, the same genre on a lot of the songs, and a couple of interesting new directions as well. And actually, the song that made me sit up watching it live, and I had to go check and see wait, where is this on the album? Is the last cut? No.
Saga, you're in love and then you're not. You can lock yourself away, just appreciate the grey. You have heard and you have lost. You're acquainted with the cost, the one that comes with feeling deep. You're still paying in your sleep, your worth. And we know what freedom brings, the awful songs it makes you sing. Don't you play around with blame, it does nothing for the pain. And please don't lock yourself away, just appreciate the grey, yeah. Even though you don't know, even though you don't.
Yeah, that is a great one. And Will, you brought up U2. I can imagine that song being like the last track on U2's October.
Right.
Would fit right in there. With a different vocalist.
The last song on the album, Ballad, is can be a risky proposition, right? Craig and I have this running joke about the piano ballad that ends the album that doesn't really fit because they just tack it on the end and there's like no piano on the whole album and then they just do that. But this one, I think it fits perfectly well.
This one is more... It chimes right in with the theme of the album, which, as Barrett was saying, is there's a lot of advice songs, sort of, you know, how to cope with life. Let us explain it to you.
Yeah.
but it's in that genre. It's a good example.
Right.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, worth noting how the first song on the first album, Big, is very ambitious song. He's kind of laying it out there, right? What is the line like? I was born small or something, but I'm going to be big. Whatever it is exactly, it's along those lines.
Yep.
Here, so full of confidence, right? Here, he's talking about how he doesn't belong, you know? A year later, I don't know if he's maybe disillusioned by what he thought a small amount of fame was going to feel like to him, or whatever, but it's a pretty stark contrast in the first tracks that kind of set the tone.
Yeah, definitely.
The first album is brash and it's angry and it's full of itself, and this one is more a little more jaded.
Right, it grew up fast.
Well, I said I thought there was one slip up, so I'll just say what is it. The song You Said is one of the slower ones, and it kind of just doesn't for me just doesn't have the good hooks that a slow song needs to have.
Yeah.
So that was just my reaction. It kind of that
It doesn't even sound like that's him singing.
No, he's got this kind of weird, like
let the bass player write and sing a song.
Yeah.
It's like the George Harrison song on the Beatles album.
It's the same singer, but yeah.
But he sings nothing like it. Like
yeah.
He does in the other ones. And I do kind of admire that, but the song isn't especially strong, I don't think. But maybe how is it live?
Well, a little bit better, just like they're all a little bit. I agree with David. Like when you watch it, it's really, really fun to watch. So it's like watching it live. It's not like I was thinking, get this song over with, get on to the next one. Not to that level, but I guess it's probably just the least inspiring of all of them. That was my viewpoint.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty good. I mean, we could have just had me like raving about it. But I think we had a good balance. Fair and balanced, right? We're like Fox News of record reviews.
You're like, I don't know. I was going to compare us to the people on Fox News, but I couldn't come up with anything that's not totally insulting.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Will, you're Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, right.
And what could I possibly say? So, yeah, let us never speak of that again.
Right, yeah. It's. Okay, time to keep on rocking. So, Fontaine's DC. The album is A Hero's Death. And we gave a pretty good balance of, I think, what the album sounds like. But the whole thing's 11 songs and 46 minutes. So,
Yeah. A little too long to put on half of a 90-minute tape. So.
At least 10 of them are great.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, you could. You'd have to fade it out, Barrett. What did you do? We've talked about this when it wouldn't fit on the cassette. Did you just let it record onto the next side, or did you fade out the last song?
No, I would. What would I do? I would fade it out if I thought of it ahead of time.
But you were talking about.
What usually happened though is you wouldn't be aware of it until you learned as it was happening.
It would just cut off.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how this one's going to end, like that.
Was that a
go back? Find that spot, and then what? Record nothing over it. I mean, you know, you could do that, right?
Yeah,
you could.
I found it. Yeah. Usually, I think I just let it go. Yeah.
The kids these days, they know nothing about. Making cassette mixtapes, you know, recording your LPs on cassette, and then, you know, making all these. I used to make all these party tapes. They were like the greatest hits of my own in my own mind.
Yeah.
Oh man, those are fun days. I guess now people can share playlists, right? But we never seem to do that.
Yeah. Right. Kids these days don't even remember CDRs, let alone cassettes.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
That was just a little blip in time. All right, should we move on?
What's next?
Well, usually we save the vault for last. We only have one vault selection, and we do have one. So maybe we should turn it over to David for his new and upcoming artist.
Yeah, speaking of kids, I just ran across this artist who I think is pretty young. I haven't really checked it out. She comes from a little place, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, called Melbourne, not Florida. It's in Australia somewhere.
Yeah, I know a guy who has a barbecue over there.
Yeah,
a nice patio and a really nice grill. Yeah.
So. Is Australia the one that's next to Germany, or is it the one that's the big continent? I get mixed up.
That big continent out in the Pacific, yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Actually, I started listening to this only knowing that she was a solo artist that had done some, you know, originally did a recording, you know, at home and started releasing them. And this, I guess, is more professionally produced. But I didn't know where she was from, so I only discovered that, like everyone else, she's from Melbourne.
Yep.
And her name is Katie Day. Should I pick a track?
Could just go ahead and pick a track.
All right.
Sure.
How about the next to last track, which is called Hoping?
I will fall in love with anyone that I want.
Katie Day. Her album is called My Data.
Actually, her fourth album.
So she's sort of a veteran, but just hasn't been discovered by us previously.
Yeah, I think this might be the first one on an actual label, which is Run for Cover Records.
Uh-huh. You know, I only started listening to this yesterday and didn't... I was looking for something about it that stood out, or, you know, we listen to a lot of sort of singer-songwriter-writery stuff, and I didn't get a real strong handle on whether or not I liked it or how much I might like it, but it is, it does have just different little touches to it, different sounds and textures and things that I think I would like it if I went back and spent a little bit more time with it.
Yeah, when I first put it on, I right away you notice the electronic production, and in the first couple of tracks she's got some real like bouncy, punchy percussion. So I was listening to it one of the first times, and I had it on in the kitchen. I told my wife, I think this is kind of poppy. So like I used the term poppy because of the production sound. Got about four songs into it, and my wife's like, "This is not poppy," and she didn't mean it in a nice way because she said, "This is a little too angsty for me." So it's interesting because it's got a bit of that angsty feel to it, but with a lot of and a pretty diverse amount of sounds that she's mixing into it, right?
Yeah, I would say extremely angsty. In fact, I'm thinking maybe this would be in Chris's wheelhouse, but I don't know. Maybe it may even be too angsty for Chris. I don't know, but for me, it hit exactly the right spot. So.
Barrett, did you listen enough to make a pick?
No, I think I'd be fair to defer my picks to David, or to you if you have one that you're dying to.
Yeah, I had it narrowed down to three, so I'll pick one, then we'll throw it back to David. I like the song number 8, Loving. I couldn't tell in the middle of that whether the chirping was in the song or from Barrett's backyard. I think it mixed in.
Mixed in that. Yeah, mixed in really well.
Yep. So, yeah.
Using that, you know, that wide array of sounds, whatever comes in, you know, sounds like it belongs.
Right. It totally did.
All right.
Yeah, so back to David.
I would say that my pick would be the title track, which is the last track, which is absolutely amazing. But it sounds a little too much like what we played already, so I think we should try track 2.
That's called Dancing.
I am myself a shelter, my own personal hell girl. There's no other place I can go. Inside I am unbounded, constantly unraveling. There must be a place I can go. 'Cause I want to be going, infinitely going. Go forever in words, outlets, anywhere. I need you to be my choreographer, the answers laid out for her. Don't hold back, I'll move however you want me to. I am my own dancer, my own private dancer. I will do whatever I'm told. I won't disobey her, I'll never betray her.
Katie Day. Yeah, that's actually pretty impressive. I mean, if that's just her own home recording. Maybe they used a studio, I'm not sure, since it's on a record label. But
yeah, it's probably progressed to a real studio, but yeah. I mean, obviously it's all electronic, so I don't think there's anyone else that's really turning the knobs except for her. So yeah.
Yeah, so it's got the electronic but also that very naturalistic bird chirping,
right,
which she borrowed I think from the Fontaines, which had a lot.
Yeah every track though, it's very
really enhances the whole thing.
The birds were really loud on that one. I was looking up at this little birdhouse here. Every time the birds are going crazy, like little baby, I can see one of the baby birds with their mouth like way open and the mom regurgitating chewed up food into the mouth of the baby bird. So,
wow,
it's like a National Geographic special here.
I thought maybe they were listening to the music like through your headphones, Barrett, and they were kind of trying to chirp along with it.
No, well, maybe. I mean, who can say what goes on in the mind of a bird?
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, they could have been trying to mimic the sounds or to communicate somehow. But
well, I've got birds and butterflies going past me here. So speaking of National Geographic, you got to catch up. What have you got in your studio?
Yeah, there's no birds in fourth bedroom studios. It's pretty. I've got no animals in here right now. There's a dog outside barking, wanting to get inside, but I'm going to make him sit.
All right.
All right. Well, cool. Katie Day.
Yeah, I'm still working on converting people to the cause of Katie Day, but I have hopes. We'll have to see what Chris has to say. And Anurag.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. But it's very compelling, I thought.
Very cool. Good. Is it time for the special feature now?
Gotta do the jingle, right?
Yeah, I think we do.
Do you have the radio edit yet for the jingle, or is
no,
it still?
It's still long.
15 minutes long.
Maybe I can fade it a little bit. We'll see. We'll see if I can work some magic in the studio. It's got to be in here somewhere.
Oh my God, I can't believe I still got this. Wow. When this came out, I was still in diapers, and David was already getting laid.
There we go. That was 33 seconds out of the 42-second jingle that I recorded. Maybe still not short enough for a radio edit.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's fine.
All right, back to the vault. I kind of like this vault trend we're doing.
Yeah.
I've got one already that I think I probably want to talk about next week. So we'll see if we can get a couple other podcasters on. And seems like, Barrett, you're always good for a vault pick. You've got the depth of musical history that you can always come up with one.
You know, I find it kind of hard, especially these first couple of times that we're doing it, to pick something because it's like, I don't know, people read too much into it. Is this Barrett's all-time favorite album from the 80s? Or, you know, so I shouldn't read too much into it. It's although this is in my top 20 of all time. Up on the Sun by the Meat Puppets. It was their third album, 1985, on SST Records, which, you know, it's like Black Flag and the Minutemen and these guys were all sort of label mates at the same time. And I'm not sure that there's much that you can. Obviously, Black Flag and the Minutemen are both in the kind of American hardcore scene. These guys are a little bit of an outlier. But, yeah, I just. I was 19 years old when this album came out, and at that time I was pretty much almost exclusively listening to REM, and this just kind of came in and shook everything up, and yeah, I don't think a year has gone by where I haven't listened to it probably five times.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's impressive.
Up on the Sun. Did you guys like this album back then, or were you... what's your kind of take on the Minutemen, or rather of Meat Puppets in general?
I never heard it. I never listened to it. Like, it was just this band that I had heard of. So yeah. This is the first time that I've heard it. So it's fun.
Yeah.
Adds to my indie rock cred. One thing I was going to ask you, though, Barrett, the version of the album that I got on the streaming service is... 17 songs and 57 minutes? Is the original album that long, or did they add stuff to it later?
The last song on there is either Creator. Let me see. And the last song on there is Creator, number 12.
Okay, that's the real last song.
They start to repeat.
Yeah, and then there's this really weird, like, so there's three versions of a track called Hot Pink. And
yeah, I didn't even listen to those.
Yeah, last one is really terrible. It's 8 minutes. It doesn't belong on there at all.
So, right.
I'm glad to hear that it wasn't part of the original album.
Right. So it clocks in at I don't know how long it is, but not much more than a half an hour, the real album. So I don't know. You want me to just make a pick?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I thought that I would just wing it because I know all these songs so well and something would strike me. So I'm going to go with track 11, Two Rivers.
We'll be right back.
Birds are back.
The birds are back. So yeah, that one, I think the intro maybe goes on a little bit long. I never felt that before, but it's only when I realized that at some point you're going to cut it off. And I, oh shit, I better get, get down to business here. But then when they do, when they get into the main part of the song, it's like a cloud lifts and, you know, the kind of the melody shines through. But what I like about, of course, I didn't think about it at the time because I hadn't heard Kurt Vile, but it's got a Kurt Vile definitely has the same sort of a vibe, right?
The slacker vocal.
Slackery. Doesn't sound like they're trying too hard. At the same time, when you listen to the instrumentation and stuff, it's like, there's a lot of skill, and he's, it's like Kurt Vile. He doesn't like sloppily play his guitar. It's almost like a practiced kind of slacker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To a practice so, slacker. That's good.
You know? So, yeah, it's got kind of the same guitar tones, too.
It's funny that you said you were listening to a lot of REM, because that track sounds quite a bit like REM, I think.
I'd never thought of that.
It's, you know, progressions sound like Peter Buck. And they also have one of the things I like about it is the punchy bass lines that go through the whole thing, and that's kind of like early REM, too.
Yeah, kind of a Chronic Town vibe to it.
Yep.
I can hear that. It's kind of a grunged up REM.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll make a pick. I liked number 7, Buckethead.
I got no hair, it's a butter with teeth. It likes to dream, it likes to sleep. It knows how, it knows what's cool. It knows what's what, it's no fool. Fill up the bucket with whatever you got. Make sure it's something that the butter likes a lot. Sure, it's something that the bug likes a lot. Lie on the window, looking through this tiny bucket. Knows just what to do. Goes over here, goes over there. It takes this tiny bucket almost everywhere. Fill up the bucket with whatever you got. Make sure it's something that the bug likes a lot. Bucket has an absolute truth. What do you do? What sure it's trying to do? All that goes in, it's mixed around. And all that flows, and make the sound.
Yeah, kind of a bouncy one.
Yeah, that's a good one. You'd be hard-pressed to find a bad one, so don't want to give you too much credit for accidentally picking a good one.
Right. David, what did you think?
Well, I haven't really listened enough to make a pick, I don't think, unless I were just to pick the title track, but I think I should defer to Barrett on that.
All right. Let me think here. I'm going to pick... the song. Why don't I pick the title track? Track number 1, Up on the Sun.
Thank you.
Meat Puppets. We didn't mention where they are from. Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
You don't hear about that many bands from Phoenix, do you?
No, you don't. I can't think of one right now off the top of my head from Phoenix.
Yeah.
The band Phoenix is from France.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe there's a band called France from Phoenix.
There could be. There could be. So, I think to a lot of people, Meat Puppets are probably best known as the band that Nirvana covered on their Unplugged album from whatever year that was. What year was that? 94 or something. I guess they had been touring with the Meat Puppets, so obviously the Meat Puppets are opening up for them. And they chose three other songs to play, so I think that's a pretty good endorsement of the band. It's from their previous album. It came out 1 year before this. It's called Meat Puppets 2. So, yeah.
And they, cool. Is this one of those broke up and reformed in the OOs, or did they continue on?
They broke up for a long time. I do know they're back. It's two brothers, and I think one of them had some severe drug and alcohol problems. They probably both did, but the brother Kurt Kirkwood, I think, was the one that his behavior kind of necessitated the original breakup of the band.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all cleaned up and back. They might even be making new music now. I'm not sure. But this kind of early sound they had in the early to mid 80s kind of disappeared after Nirvana, speaking of Nirvana, after they came. I think it was about a year later, like in 94, 95, Meat Puppets made, just like everybody else did back then, even REM, you know, they made their grunge album. And I think it's just terrible. Like, I tried to listen to it today, and it's like, man, you can sort of try to imagine all the guitars and stuff stripped away, and just that kind of grungy tone to it and dour overall attitude, and couldn't do it. So their new stuff, I don't know where it falls on that line between what they used to sound like and what they turned into. No idea.
We could
all I know is that I love this album.
We could all find out if we wanted to.
Good.
I just found they have a 2019 album called Dusty Notes.
Mm.
But this is daring. Let's play a little bit of the first track.
Oh, we have no idea what it sounds like.
None of us know what's going to happen here. It's total spontaneity. That isn't bad, is it? Seems pretty respectable.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes, you know, the band that you loved 30 years ago, you might not have any interest in hearing anything new by them just because you know it's not going to be, you can't go back 30 years, you know.
Right.
But whenever a band I love from the past comes out with something, I usually at least have to sample it or maybe listen to it once. And it usually results in disappointment. Like, listen to any like Echo and the Bunnymen album from the last decade, and it's like oh man, I don't know.
Speaking of that, the Psychedelic Furs came out with an album last Friday.
Yes, yeah,
that's right.
I gave it a listen, and sounds nice, but they just sound like a Psychedelic Furs cover band that's trying to sound like the old Psychedelic Furs, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I read...
What are you going to do? You either have to try to sound like your old self, which is going to sound kind of inauthentic, or do something completely different, which literally nobody wants to hear that. So you kind of, I don't know, you got to choose. There's really no, you're not going to please everybody.
I had read about that Psychedelic Furs album, and a lot of the reviewers are they really like it. They're really impressed. So I'm like, well, I got to listen to this. And I put it on in the car, and honestly, I got, you know, a few songs into it. It just started to feel tedious. Like, I guess I have to listen. I guess for completeness, I got to make sure I make it through once. And then I got through him, and I was like, I think that's enough. You know, I just don't know if I want to make the effort. And probably maybe it's an album that if you decided to invest in it and listen to it three or four times, you'd start to really appreciate the songs. So I don't want to say that it's bad, but I think it's like what you were saying, Barrett. It's just
fine.
Like,
it's fine.
Yeah, it's just a question of where your motivations are
now than that. I mean,
yeah.
And what kind of a mood would you have to be in? Like, I'm not going to listen to Talk, Talk, Talk. I'm going to listen to whatever this new one's called. I would never be in that mood.
I mean, I can theoretically think of that in that, you know, maybe you've heard those other albums already so many times and you want something new and different that also has, you know, the classic Richard Butler vocals. And
right.
So, I mean, I could see a rationale, but for everyone, it's like they have to determine, you know, do you have the motivation? Do you really want to hear a new Psychedelic Furs album? So, yeah.
It's kind of like the way I feel about new Pixies material. It's like, yeah, I know it's out there, but am I really interested in listening to it? I don't know. Probably not.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't mean I love them any less, but, you know,
we've
reached a point where...
Yeah, like, what if the Beatles had come out with a record in, like, 1988? Yeah, I wouldn't want to hear that. I mean, I would. It'd be such morbid curiosity, but...
Well, that would have been three, for one thing. Only three Beatles, so, yeah.
That's true. I'm imagining an alternate universe where maybe John Lennon stays in London, never moved to New York.
You know, Barrett, you were talking about, you know, the Meat Puppets album that you didn't like because they were trying to follow the grunge thing, you know, and so many bands did that. But I think going back a bit, I think even a bigger deal was the disco craze and bands, not necessarily like turning into a disco band, but like doing something with a disco beat so that it fits in with the current trends, right?
Totally.
So like the thing I always like to kind of think about and joke about is the Hendrix disco album that would have happened if Jimi Hendrix had lived, you know?
The Grateful Dead, too? I mean, I don't listen to the Grateful Dead, but I think they were accused of that in 1978, right?
I don't remember that, but it's funny.
Oh.
Like, it would have to, I mean, obviously it's not going to be full-on disco, but maybe that required a little bit more research before I just blurted that out there.
Well, I never thought you could come up with a reason to be happy that Jimi Hendrix died young, but, you know, I think you just hit on the only one that I can think of.
That we avoided the disco album? Yeah. Well, I mean, it is fascinating to think about, isn't it? Because there's a theoretical body of work over the next couple of decades or whatever that he would have had. And then who knows, it wouldn't have sounded exactly the same as what he did before. It's not going to be another like Purple Haze, you know.
Right.
Just interesting. Yeah. Okay. 3 for 3. I'm going to declare us 3 for 3 and also greater than $0. I do that all the time, but I think it's always correct.
Wait, didn't you say we're going to talk about the Taylor Swift album?
I didn't say that. But if you want to hear Taylor Swift trying to sound like the National, then listen to that album, right?
Not bad, you know? It's really not bad. Gotta say.
I'm sure if I decided to listen to it, I would think, and especially if I didn't know it was Taylor Swift, right? If you just were handed this album, and, you know, this is a young indie rock artist produced by Aaron Dessner, you'd be like, that's pretty solid. A pretty good album.
I don't think you'd feel, I don't feel that way. But
I think
like in the realm of pop music, like pop music with a capital P, right?
Yeah.
It's nice enough. It's good. But I mean, I don't know. It's just, no, it's just not for me. It's fine. A lot of people love it.
Yeah.
Take all the things that I like, put a little enthusiasm number next to each one, add them all together. Most people that like Taylor Swift like her more than the aggregate of everything I liked, so
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, commenting without actual knowledge, because I've sampled it a little bit. It just sounded to me like maybe I'm like following the hype of you know, all the credit she's been given for, you know, going at least a little bit outside the standard expected thing that people might think she would put out, and it's you know, maybe a little introspective and a little more, you know, of a downer, which is always good, I think, for music to be a little bit of a downer.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, give it a chance.
We'll have to see what Anurag's daughter thinks about it.
You know, I'm playing with fire here because the New York Times, John Carmonica, gave it a review, and I read it, and it said, you know, mostly like pretty nice things about it. Metacritic assigned it a rating of 60.
Wow, really?
Absolutely roasted on Twitter. Like people calling for his, you know, being fired, and Metacritic, you have to take this off of the site, and it, you know, like just incredible. Him, and he's getting all these threats and stuff.
You mean the guy from Metacritic?
No, he's the New York Times writer. Metacritic will take reviews from, you
yeah,
know, the
they,
New York Times.
They just Pitchfork, aggregate
Onion,
them.
Whatever, everything.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Guardian, and make an aggregate score.
Okay.
And
so you can't blame for the aggregate.
Right, right. Well, that's why I was thinking it was kind of weird. But so the New York Times guy, did his score bring down the average? Is that what happened?
Brought it down to an 89, and people were pissed as F about that.
I thought you said it was a 60.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
But it was an 89? It was 89 no, before?
89 is like, then you're taking somebody from the New Republic that gave it 100.
Yeah, yeah.
And him and all these other people. And there were a lot of eye-wateringly high scores on that thing.
Yeah.
And his was like, you know, 60, 3 out of 5. It's not a pan.
So I understand now. So his assigned score of 60 brought the average down to 89, and the fans were outraged.
Right.
Okay.
It's kind of like, they do movies too, it's kind of like Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just take all the critics and come up with a consensus score.
Yeah.
So... I yeah, like, this might be the last time you hear from me on this podcast. If I get, if I start getting death threats and things from
right.
the Taylor Swift army, I'm just gonna
it could happen
disappear.
I feel like Barrett has put a lot of time and effort into this for an artist that he doesn't care for at all. So it's kind of interesting.
I think he has.
That is true.
He has it out. He's out to get her, and the fans should be outraged. Yeah,
I mean, it's at least interesting. She's the biggest thing going right now, right?
Well, yeah. She's certainly right up there.
Right up there.
That's why we covered her, because, you know, we only cover the big names, right?
That's right.
The popular ones.
Katy Day, Katy Perry.
The cool people.
You know, all the Katies.
Yep.
Taylor Swift.
All right. Well, we should sign off. We've gone on long enough, and...
Well over $0.
Yeah.
Well.
So, mission accomplished, we like to say. Yeah. All right, let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.